This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Hey, what up? It's Meghan Trainor.
Yo, this is Justin Bieber.
Hey, it's Ariana Grande.
Just the Interviews, a Zach Sang Show exclusive podcast.
How you guys doing? Sorry for being late.
That's all right. We're doing good.
How dare you?
How dare you?
No, it's fine. I've been dealing with life stress, so actually I'm really happy that you took
What's up with
what
your life?
Happened to your life?
I'm getting a dog, which is a good thing.
Yeah, what kind did you get?
I'm rescuing a French bulldog.
Oh, good for you.
Dan claims I'm not rescuing, but
It's not a real rescue.
No.
It's a breeder.
It's a fake rescue.
No. Yeah. Okay. The breeder has been fostering the dog because the original parents of the dog for 2 years couldn't take care of it any longer, and instead of giving it to the shelter, they just gave it back to the breeder.
Oh, interesting.
That counts.
So he's rescuing it, but it's at the breeder's house. It's not like in a cage.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
My gosh. You're ridiculous.
It's a half rescue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I give him honorable still. I give him 75% rescue credit.
I'll take it. Yeah. And I'll donate to get to 100.
That's exciting, though. You're going to have a great time.
You're a dog owner.
Yeah, I love it.
You have a golden retriever.
Thing. Yeah, yeah. She's my baby. Yeah. I almost brought her
you
on this whole day. But yeah, she wouldn't be. That wouldn't. That's
she
not
hates
her vibe.
Press.
Who hates press more, your dog or you?
Me.
By the way, hello, beautiful human. Dan's here. And,
yeah.
Alex and Drew are here, the Chainsmokers.
All right. What's up?
You are here for a reason. Hopefully,
there's no reason why we're here.
They're just hanging out today.
Yeah. You can sit there all day. I'll probably leave at a certain point. But great record.
Thanks.
All you mind.
Thanks.
BB Rex on that.
What do you think about it?
I vibe with it. I really like it a lot. Mm-hmm. And I need another BB. I need a follow-up to Last Hurrah. Mm-hmm. I think it's the right collaboration to follow 5 Seconds of Summer.
Sure. Yeah, we've been trying to do a song with her for like ever. Like we were recalling earlier that she was not only the first like artist we ever like worked with in person.
Yeah.
But also I think the first like songwriter session we ever did was with her.
So Drinking About You is the record you're talking about. The first song.
Well,
we
remixed. We actually didn't ever make anything in that particular session, but like first time we like went to go work with like someone who wrote songs or an artist or whatever.
When you first met with her, were you writing for her or were you working for somebody else?
I think we were just trying to do something because I think we had we did the I Can't Stop Drinking About You remix later, but we had just remixed Cash Cash's Take Me Home, which she sang. Which was her first like time she got her voice on a hit or something.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. You meet her wrapped around a remix.
Yeah.
But you guys are at the different beginning stages of your careers at the same time. What did you recognize in her that you knew was different and that you knew?
I mean, she's just an insane songwriter. And her, partially why the reason we have her, like, really like, needed her to do this song is because, like, her vocal ability is, like, pretty unmatched in like today's like pop climate. Like she can, what is it called?
I can't remember that.
She's like the highest level. Yeah. We call her the Tony Soprano.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause we don't, it's like that. There's some kind of crazy thing. Like her and Mariah Carey have this like quality in common.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We need to get more literate.
And she's also like very, she's like very confident. You know what I mean?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
And the way her like brain thinks, it's like endless songwriting. You know what I mean? She can like write personal songs, but she could also like step outside them and just write like really amazing songs that are just amazing songs, you know, which is something that like.
And for other people too.
Yeah, exactly. For other people.
When we met her, she was doing, I remember the first session we ever did, she goes, I have the song that I think is going to be a Eminem Rihanna song. And we were like, sure you do. Sure enough, Monster came out and she was on her way.
Followed by like 7 or 8 other big ones.
Yeah. So.
Her ability to write poems, like, and that's where a lot of them start. She sat on that couch and she's just recited them. They're so beautiful and they're very raw. And you hit something. Her confidence is really unique, but it's her confidence matched with her sense of groundedness. And the fact that, like, when you hang with her to, like, when you see her on social, she's just like everybody else in the best possible way.
Sure.
You know?
There's a perfect mixture of, like, crazy, which you'll, like, fully admit in there that, like, makes it all just so interesting because it's not, like, predictable.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like when we were shooting, she's like, just be warned, like this could go any way at any time. You know what I mean?
She's up there rocking leather, like doing a whole strip routine.
Yeah, yeah. She's awesome. She looks great.
Who pitches that concept? Where does that video concept start?
We had a couple treatments that we were really into, and then we also know that she's like as much as part of the song as we are. So we sent her like ones we liked, and she was just like the one where I kill you. that was it.
Okay, well, what about one that I kill you?
Yeah.
Was it always in reverse?
No, but yeah.
Concept was always reverse.
Well, when we shot it,
You didn't actually walk backwards.
That was a lame joke.
Yeah. But we were saying when we first saw the first cut, obviously, like there's a couple of edits to it, and like there's a shot they had in there where it looks like, because you don't know the context yet, and it just looks like Drew and me are napping on each other to start the whole music video, and we're like, I don't know, not that there's anything wrong with dudes napping on each other, but I don't know, like it like sets the song up the right way.
It's hard to really attach the two.
Yeah.
So the actual lyrics of the song, does it start in a session does it start from nothing, you guys getting together, or did somebody bring a lyric to the table?
We worked on the song with Ali Tamposi, Andrew Watt, and Steve Mack, who it's like kind of like all-star song, plus us and BB. It's like real like all-star combination.
Yeah. Now are you in the studio at once together or?
So, well, but in a bunch of different pieces. So Ali, Steve, and Andrew started the song and then sent it to us, and we're like, okay, I think we can do something with this, but like it can't sound anything like this, but there were like, there was some magic to it. And we've had this song for
easily a year.
Oh, probably over a year, just trying to like get it right, like moving stuff around, like just writing new pieces of music, new like pieces of lyrics, like just trying to get everything like in the right order. And it took like 6 months probably to get to that point, get the production where we like thought it was cool. Sometimes we do a song in like a day, but like this one just took a long time.
But that's a common thread through some of the collaborations, because it was the same thing with 5 Seconds of Summer. Like
it took a while.
Long time to do.
Yeah, that is true. I guess our last two big collaboration songs. Oh, I mean, we've had a lot of.
Yeah. This feeling was like
so much music.
This feeling was like written in a day, and then you produced it like 2 days later.
Yeah.
I guess it really is just always different. It also depends like how many cooks are in the kitchen though, because
that's true.
Like
too.
A lot of the time, like obviously, like ultimate respect to like Ali, Andrew, and Steve, but like they can tell us. You like need to work on this more, or make it more like this, or do this. Whereas like this feeling was just like in house, so it's like if we're happy with it, we're happy with it. You know what I mean? And then we'll tinker with it. Obviously, it's not just like you just are like that was good. Here it is.
Yeah.
But yeah, like when there's other people in it, you like to wait for feedback. They like you know
they have a lot invested.
It's everyone's song. You want to be respectful of everyone who's worked on it. You know,
and you want that because that's kind of the challenge, right? I guess when they push you and it's a give and a take. I guess.
I mean, everyone has a different skill set and thing they're like really good at. Especially you know like when you look in certain camps of people that like are writer camps, it's like, oh, this guy's the best guy for drums. This guy isn't a lyrics person, but he can like crush harmonies. Or this guy is the best vocal producer, period, like Lewis Bell, you know? So there's just like, you know, there's different people who offer the thing, and then you learn a lot from it because you're like, oh, that was actually like a great idea. Or, you know, like, I'm glad you forced me to spend an extra week on this, you know, ultimately. Sometimes you're just like, no, you're an I hate this. And then you have to push back too, you know what I mean? Because it's like...
Well, because they have to respect you just like you respect them.
Exactly. And that's a cool thing about this whole process.
Isn't it kind of weird that like as you've progressed in your original hits, right? They were just you guys and it started maybe a little bit more organically. And you do you feel like you still know what a hit sounds like? Because there's so many... It's a different creative process now.
It's not really.
At all?
It's all, well, you're right in that it's different, but it's not that it's different now and from then, it's that every song is different. Like, Alex was just talking about, like, everyone has, like, a different set of skills, and depending who we work on a song with, whether it's an artist, a writer, a producer, whatever, we've learned to be very malleable and show up and be like, you know, we might have to play guitar today, make beats today, write lyrics today. You know, you try to figure out how to get the most out of every like musical experience you have with somebody. So there are songs to this day that are just us, as there were when we started, and there are songs when we started that were like we wrote like Don't Let Me Down with Emily Warren, who is now a frequent collaborator with us, as you know. And this feeling was like just us and Emily, you know.
What fuels the want to get something out of a session? Is it the fact that you have to create a lot of music, which you brought up, because of how people consume it today? Like
we definitely pay attention to like the way people consume things, but what's lucky for us is like, as you can, so we're like, as you know, this is our second like building album concept where we put out a bunch of songs and they make up a compilation or they make up an album. And the reason for that being like, we want to put out albums because we believe in like chapters of an artist's career and if this is the phase that we're in. But the way that we write and produce all the time, not because like, we're like, we need to like come up with a new song because like, you know, everyone just like wants more and more stuff. It's more of like, which it may be true, but it's more like we're always touring. We're always producing. We don't want to like, you know, I feel like when we put all of our effort into one song at a time, it just, we get a better product.
So how long top to bottom did it take you to create World War Joy? And is the album done?
No, it's not done.
It's probably just about halfway, like at the fifth song, I think.
Wow. Yeah.
So, I mean, we can call it whenever, you know what I mean? But, like, we definitely, I know we have at least three more songs for it, and that will probably become more.
But that's what, but, like, that's another thing is that, like, sometimes you have zero songs and you're like, what is the next song? And you're like, I don't know. You know what I mean? And then there are times like now where it's like, we actually have a really good idea of what the next three songs are going to be.
Yeah.
And they're like really far along, which is probably the best position to be in because you have the flexibility to feel it out. Like maybe, you know, hopefully Call You Mine turns into this, a great song that we can like let everyone enjoy for a second. And then, you know what I mean? Versus being like, here's another one. You know what I mean? And we don't also put music out every month just because we hope that one becomes a hit and then the second one does. We like stop releasing music. It's more just like you have to, if the song becomes a hit, like people are like, stop. You know what I mean? Because you might like be doing yourself a disservice.
By putting out something new and distracting people.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Marinating this for a second.
Exactly. So,
which by the way, everyone kind of tells us to slow down, but we want to put this stuff out too. Because we care more about like what our fans want, you know? And we have like a relationship with them that's like, they know we're putting out music. They know we're writing stuff constantly and they want more like records for us and we want them to hear them. So
it starts with them, number one. And like the people who usually have to play catch up or could get easily distracted are the old people on radio. So like, to be honest, like those are the people that are, they're always behind the eight ball no matter what you're doing.
Yeah, yeah.
You get what I'm saying? They're always going to play catch up and their catch up is going to be based on what your fans do and then what your fans create sparks a record. And
absolutely, I mean, you love when something like an artist like Billie Eilish, it's like, I mean, I'm literally probably until like some person was like, an old person was like, have you seen this girl's Instagram? My kids won't stop talking about her. And you know what I mean? And it's like, and it's like, we have to put her on the radio. This doesn't sound like anything that's been on the radio. You know what I mean? And then it's like, and then now we hear, you know, Bad Guy everywhere. And it's like, but that was like someone late to the party being like, we have to put this on the radio, but this is not, I don't know if this is a pop song or an alternative song.
We're always late to the party pretty much.
But I mean, that's not your fault either. Like, I mean, I don't think like necessarily like everything is like reflective of what people are listening to. Like, I don't remember if it was here when we were talking about the charts last time where it's like, if you're not on the Spotify charts, does that like matter to you? And it's like, of course you want to be on the charts. But like, you also think about, we were just listening to Rufus on the way over here. Who are amazing. And it's like their biggest song has like 100 million streams or something. You know what I mean? And like they have 15 amazing records. You know what I mean? And
that like one stands out and the other are hovering in a couple million or whatever.
Yeah, but like they can sell out three nights at the Shrine, no problem. You know what I mean? So it's like that doesn't, you know what I mean? There's like this disconnect between all everything.
But that's also the difference between, okay, I think the internet is the most amazing thing to happen to us, and it's also as much a blessing as it is a curse. Any artist can go out there and find an audience now because it exists. I think there's a lot of room for artists to showcase their music and have a chance to get out there and be able to build fan bases. But radio should reflect that a little bit more, at least pop radio. It should be more reflective of all genres as opposed to sticking to just like whatever they have created in their head as their own.
Radio is the most complicated thing that I don't think I'll ever fully understand.
It's subjective.
The current model of like, especially terrestrial radio now exists, like it's all like analytics driven.
Yeah.
So it's like, I don't even know.
Like strange analytics, like call this person and they'll just and play 5 seconds of the song and then they decide if the research is good or not.
Yeah.
And then that like reflects back to you guys somehow. And then you decide if you add two spins to it. You know what I mean? And those two spins add up across the whole country, which then moves us up to like, you know, 12 from 13. And it's like, and that is a big deal. You know what I mean? But you can't deny it. I mean, we like see it though. Like, and we, but like what we see when we go to Vegas is like, as like Vegas, let's call it like the melting pot of society.
Totally.
You know what I mean?
Crossroads.
And, you know, we could, it takes forever for a popular song, like even if you see it at number one on Spotify,
oh my God,
3 weeks, 4 weeks, to like actually make its way into the club, which is like kind of what radio reflects.
Yeah, because
more
it needs to break the mainstream. It needs to really like weave its way in.
Exactly. But you think a number one record on Spotify that's been there for like a month would be like, everyone knows the song now, you know? But it's not the case. And it's like,
it took like, I think maybe 9 months for us to be able to play Mo Bamba in Vegas.
Yeah. Really?
Like, we kept trying it out. And you'd think like, that's like a, that's a party record. That's a, that comes on and everyone gets super hype. Like, it just popped off like 4 months ago.
Yeah.
You know?
But see, you know, that gives you the, I'm telling you, any sort of DJ where you're picking music, whether it's your own music or somebody else's music for a live audience that's standing in front of you and a house like freaking Vegas that is the crossroads of the entire world.
Yeah, yeah.
Dude, you learn about music saturation.
It's also tough when you have to play your own music and you're like, okay, we're gonna sit on this one for a couple more months before this one starts getting fun here. And then you play it and you're like, thank God we've reached the, you know.
Because you have your own gauge, like in-house that you're reminded of constantly. Is that hard when you have to drop one of your own records or play somebody else's record instead of yours in the set?
Yeah, I mean, tonight we're going to play Call You Mine, and that's going to be like an interesting reaction. You know what I mean?
It'll be interesting because like, I also don't sing on it. Yeah. So like, on records that I sing, I can at least perform. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But like, it is tough when you're like at the club, but the record slaps, and it's going to, I think it's going to sound really good in the club. So
didn't you guys play Baby Shark the other day?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, have you heard edit we played?
I just saw a quick clip of you guys doing it.
Did you see with like,
it goes into Sandstorm.
It goes into Sandstorm.
Really?
It is so lit.
Shout out to Jaws.
Jaws made it.
But it's so good.
It's, and like it's ridiculous, but we play it at the perfect time of night. It's like 90 minutes in the set. It's like 3 a.m. Everyone's blacked out and it comes on.
Yeah.
And what's fun about Vegas is like everyone, like a lot of people are like, oh, it's an older audience too. So like everyone like has kids. So they like know this song.
Yeah.
And like we had like literally that was Russell Westbrook came with us to Vegas last weekend.
No big deal.
And he was like, that was probably like the one song that he like popped off for the most. The entire night. Because he's got three kids. He's like all about it.
Yeah.
What is your job in that moment? Is it to give people a good time? Is it to solely reflect culture as it relates to everybody?
In Vegas?
Yeah.
Vegas is a party. I mean, like our job everywhere else is different than Vegas, because Vegas is like, I mean, we're always trying to create a great experience where people have a great time, but people are in Vegas for the sole reason that they want to like let loose with their friends, their family for a special occasion. And we understand that like they might be at our club because they're staying at the hotel, because they heard that their friends were going. They might not necessarily be a Chainsmokers fan. So we still want those people to have a good experience like at our show. And so we were very open to play. You got to kind of let your ego go and be like, what's going to be the most fun lineup of records? And it's left us with a really eclectic set of like, we'll still play dubstep. We'll still play like that likes way too hard to play in like an LA club or whatever. We'll still like get up and sing our songs, but then we'll play like f***ing Baby Shark or like We Are the Champions, the whole thing. You know what I mean? Just because like... But like, you play at the right time and you mix them all together, it makes for a great party.
Does that knowledge of how people react to those records, whether they be present records or nostalgic records, does that affect the way you create and the sound you end up going for?
I feel like it'd be like naive to say it doesn't, but I don't ever think about that. I think about like, what would I want to hear, you know? I just like, it's just, and that's what it is. And like, there are things that we love, like love, that aren't, we just can't play. Don't fit anywhere in that Vegas set.
Yeah, like Kills You Slowly. It's like, kids just can't play that song in our set. You know what I mean? But we do get great remixes, and we rely heavily on like the dance music community to like, you know, like we still reach out to like new and young producers to remix our songs that come out. And like a lot of times those songs become what we play in our set, you know, because, you know, like we'll play like the verse of the original and then like use their drop, which is like much more energetic. And it's cool that, you know, we've been doing that for a long time, and it's like, very helpful to have that. But yeah, I mean, that was like when we let go of the idea of like, this doesn't have a drop, what DJs are going to support us? It's like when everything started working for us, to be honest with you.
Yeah, that was kind of crazy. And like, I love Beach House and I love Bon Iver and I love like Vampire Weekend and like, you know, Death Cab for Cutie. I'm just like spitting out random people that like, you could never drop one of their records in the club. It just wouldn't work. But like, I'm still heavily influenced by them in our music. Like there's a lot of like things that I pull from the artists that I love that have a place in our songs that don't have a place in our live set.
But can't you remix one of those songs and make it your own that has a drop in it?
We talked about doing a remix album next year.
Yeah.
Because we kind of missed it. Like, picking our, like, 15 favorite songs. I don't know if at the time or maybe over, like, the last year.
That's cool.
And, like, putting it, doing, like, a... Because, like, that's what we started doing. And it's, like, really fun for your live shows to have, like, something that's, like, original to you. But also, like, people are super just familiar and down to sing.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, we love... I mean, it's just, like, the time of it. It's, like, you really have to commit to it. Because we were, like, scoring a movie right now. We're working on our live show that's coming up. We're working on our album. We're working on another secret musical project that's going on.
Jesus.
You know, and that's just like scratching the surface.
Yeah, we're trying to sell two. We just sold two projects with our TV and film company. Like,
congratulations.
It's like endless. Thank you.
Or is it the Paris movie you guys are making?
So that's in development. We're getting offers on two more, but I want to say because it's not official yet.
Yeah,
are they?
We got the offers, but they're not papered yet. That's the difference.
Yeah, exactly.
But we're doing the score, which is official.
Until it's
official. But yeah, we're scoring our first movie, which is really exciting. We've never done
hard
that
before.
Yeah, that's like a whole new mountain to climb.
Yeah,
and one of the things I was curious about, and I want to get back to the drops in a second, but how you challenge yourself because you've been doing this type of creation and this type of art for a while. That's how.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I feel like, I mean, when you dip your hand into something else and then you go back to music, we were talking about the other day, we were like, what if we like, next time we get like a roadblock, why don't we like pull up our favorite scene from a movie and think about like what.
I forgot about that idea. It's
what
really
we would
one.
Like, how we would like, what song we would make for this moment. Mm-hmm. And we have never done that before, but like we would have never have kind of come to that conclusion unless, you know, we were making music to a scene 100%. That we were like, familiar with.
100%. I forgot that's a great idea.
Well, because then it's like, it's almost like empathy in a sense. Like you can, you're not writing about yourself. You're kind of putting yourself in somebody else's shoes.
Instead of like grabbing a guitar or keys or a sound and being like, hitting it and being like, oh, this sounds kind of good. It's like, you can watch something and be like, how does this make you feel? And then that will direct how you do it, you know? So yeah, great idea.
Partnership.
Wow, I think you have something here.
Yeah.
you're on your way. But that, I mean, scoring a freaking movie. Congrats, that's sick.
Yeah,
thanks. Well, it's not done yet. They haven't accepted it yet.
Wow. They don't.
What do you do to test that out? Like, you watch a couple scenes and you send it over.
You watch the movie.
Okay.
Decide if it's something that you feel like is aligned with what we make and if we can add value to it. And we decided we could. Then you take all the music out of the film and then you rewatch it and you decide where you think it needs music. And because it's hard to like, basically they had a score in it already, by the way.
Got it.
And then they were like, we want you guys to redo it. So we had to take everything out and just watch the movie from the beginning and then just decide. And we're working with a guy who scores movies that kind of helps us guide us through all that process. But
it's a crazy different experience watching a movie with no music.
Yeah, I mean, that's completely. Totally weird. And also, like, you think about some of your, like, they had the great songs in some templates, like Sweet Disposition and, like, Dance Yourself Clean.
In this original.
Yeah, because it's just, like, doesn't matter. They're just, like, put this here so you can get, like, a vibe, you know, because they're just, it's like a temp score, basically. And then you, like, take it out, and you're like, okay, that was a really sick song. You know, like, Sweet Disposition is, like, one of the best songs ever.
Yeah.
How do we...
They're like, just make something that sounds like it. You're like, I can't. What?
Yeah,
you could just quickly whip up like this amazing like nostalgic 2008 moment.
Yeah.
Okay, like
you could do it. We believe in you.
Yeah.
And you got to do it while not wanting to sound exactly what they've done. You got to be original with
it. Yeah, of course. Ooh. So you try to think about how does that song make me feel and what's the tempo and feeling of it and what would we do based on that criteria?
That's
exciting. What were you about to say?
Well, it doesn't seem like you guys are just like a DJ do anymore. It seems like you're a lot more than that.
I'd hope so.
In Vegas, we are. But I'd say everywhere else, I mean, we play, like, Matt's an official part of the band.
So would you consider yourself the Chainsmokers a band now?
Yeah, for sure.
We're not even DJing on this upcoming tour.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa.
We figured out a way to, like, give people those moments, dance moments, but, like, we don't need to do it off of CDJs.
How?
It's in the same way that I wouldn't consider Odessa or Flume or Rufus Du Sol to be a DJ.
Okay.
Like they're up there, then they, I mean, you're still like, essentially, you're not using CDJs. There's other ways, like we'll probably run our entire show through Ableton, where we're queuing stuff and then affecting stuff
like
and then playing our instruments. Exactly.
Yeah. And obviously we built this insane, it's like basically like as large as this, but facing our way. And it's like keyboards,
it's like everything.
Profits, yeah. Moogs, like MPCs across the whole thing, Akai keyboards. And it's like, and then like laptop screens and all sorts of stuff that like is going to be intense. I mean, we've never done it before. We're going to get to test it in Europe basically all summer and like perfect it. And then a couple more shows in Asia. And then the first big one will be Lollapalooza. To do this at, so we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, that's a cool, I think that's a cool stage.
I feel good. I mean, the set, I feel like our set, our show, like when everyone sees it, they'll realize it's grown up.
Yeah.
So are you, the records that we hear at a live show, starting, you know, obviously overseas and then Lollapalooza, are they going to be different sounding than the records we'd hear, you know, streaming or on the radio?
Yeah, I mean, we always, even in our DJ sets, we'd always remix or take, that's why we get so many remixes of our songs done, because we want to give, people come to see us in our songs, and we perform like them as, but like we have songs like Closer that like has been done so many, like everyone's been beaten over the head with that song, so like, we try to like reimagine, give them that song, but then we give a new like edited version that you can only hear when you come and see us.
Got it.
So that's what's been so much work, is like basically remaking all of our f***ing music that's already out. Yeah.
Learning how to like put it all back together every night.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, we have our Matt, you know, who's been instrumental in that. He's definitely like our musical director.
Our drummer.
And then, you know, like obviously like I've taken upon myself the last like 2.5 years to like really learn piano, like, you know, and every day, 2.5 hour lesson, like, whoa, every single day.
Discipline.
And then practice. I know it sucks, but it's like, but I love playing piano, actually. So it ended up being one of the greatest things I've like taken upon me. But it's like, you only get better if you do it all the time. You know what I mean? It's not I try to convince myself that it's like learning to type as a kid. You know what I mean?
Because
it's like, when
you
think about typing, it's like, you can do it now and put words together without ever looking at the screen. I mean, music's not like totally different than that. You just need to practice and do it all the time.
Yeah, figure out that muscle.
Yeah, exactly. But and then obviously same thing with him in singing. And so it's like, we've really taken it upon ourselves to make it serious. But then I like to think we're like super entrepreneurial. We're like, we're getting involved, starting a tequila. We're like
Thrive.
Doing all sorts of other business ventures. We have a TV and film production company. And
jeez,
you know, that's like the stuff you get to take your head out of the music and get into. And like having that become something real and exciting, like makes everything feels so much more valid, because it's like, you know, like we might put a song out that might not do super well, but then we sell a project to a big network and you're like, that's, to me, is like the same thing almost. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like, it's your creation getting out there and connecting and having success.
Exactly. So it's like, we're used to only being music, but now there's all these other avenues for us to like express ourselves and do interesting things, which, you know, makes life more interesting and obviously mitigates risk.
Totally. But it also gives you a balance. And I think whenever you have a good balance, everything kind of works out. Do you know what I'm saying?
Like, yeah.
When you're too deep into something, you kind of drown in it.
Yeah.
But
I agree.
Having a healthy balance of like different stuff in life.
Justin Timberlake was like a genius with that. It was like, you know, crushed it in his NSYNC days, then like went off to do a solo career, then was like, I'm going to go act. I got into like a couple of good movies, did a great job. Then like, what, I guess he like got married, you know, started a family. Now it's like back crushing it as a solo artist, and it has like what, like all these great businesses and stuff across him. And it's like, you know what I mean? Like, you never looked like you were stressed out about anything, you know, like, like, or like had like trouble figuring out what the move was, because you were always just spreading out, you know, like doing so many cool things.
And I think him doing other stuff helped the music ultimately.
For sure.
Because the more life you live, the more you experience, the more you explore, and the more, I don't know.
You're about to have a dog. Your whole life's about to change.
That's right.
Yeah.
By the way, I'm thinking about everything you're saying, and I'm like, wow, I've been doing this for 11 years, and I'm going to spice my life up with a dog.
Yeah. Dude, you'll never be the same ever again in the best way.
I've been sitting here doing this for 11 years.
It's crazy. But if you think about the growth, you know, I mean, we're like 7 years in, and so it's like, it's wild when you think about, I mean, the first time we came here, even, you know,
I remember that.
All the things that have changed then, and like, if all these other weird things that we didn't like try our hands at didn't, you know, like happen, then like, would we still be able to sit here so calmly and be like, life's good, you know what I mean? Or we got a lot of cool things.
We are secretly freaking out, though.
I can kind of tell. Because, like, you do really want the music to hit it. But what is your gauge of success then? Because I would say Who Do You Love was a freaking great record.
Yeah, yeah.
Did really freaking well.
I have this theory that we're going to, like, look back at our career and, like, people are going to be like, I can't think of an artist that this has happened to in the past, but I feel like people are going to look back and be like, damn, they really just made like good music, like all of it. You know what I mean? And like maybe like at points in their career, some songs weren't as noticed as others.
But they all will get their shine.
But like eventually, like, you know what I mean? And I'm trying to think of an artist that like feels like that, where we like forgot. I know there's like plenty where you like look back. I mean,
I think Etta James, like off the top of my head, like she's been sampled more times than ever. And the most times she's sampled, you don't even know it's her.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, even like, I mean, this is a microcosm because I'm thinking this isn't going to happen like next month necessarily, but like, like, but like with the posts, you know what I mean? He was like, obviously like White Iverson was a big, huge song, but like people, it wasn't until, was it I Fall Apart? Or
probably like Congratulations.
Yeah, Congratulations came out that people were like, this song is sick. Let me go back and check out like, not Beer Bongs and Bentley, but
Stoney.
Stoney.
People slept on that entire album until he had a hit later.
And then it was like, and then everyone's like, this guy's amazing. You know what I mean? And I'm like.
But again, late to the party because, you know, mainstream is always late to the party.
And you can't control like being in style. Mm-hmm. All you control is like doing you. Mm-hmm. Like we have to just be ourselves and like post, like things will go like this. Put out music that we think is dope. Work with people we think are dope that we believe in. And like the rest will work itself out.
It does seem like all that like random let's hate on the chain smokers thing. It seems like that kind of died out, doesn't it?
I think that happens to like most people that are like have like a really quick find success really quickly, which we did. And that was like really that did like really bother us too, because you're like, what did I do? Mm-hmm. You know, like I'm just trying, just working really hard and out here, and like it's now like in style to like. First, it was like 6 months ago. It was like I was in style to like just root for us, and now like you want to shit on us, and like you see that kind of where that all sits. And like Alex was saying, like over like your career's longevity, you're like, oh, that was that part, and then it, you know, it doesn't really affect you anymore because you moved past it.
And you watch like these art band documentaries and stuff, and it's like everyone kind of had those similar moments. They're like, I thought we were cool. And then, you know, and then it's like...
No, it's British.
Yeah. That's what you're going for, right?
But, yeah, I was like a Beatles, Rolling Stone, Queen thing.
This is not a marathon. This is a marathon, a sprint. So, totally, like, you're in it for the long run. You're not in it for the short game. And, yeah, there's going to be ups and downs. It's the way it works. And you're 100% right. Everybody has that.
Yeah.
People fall in and out of style or trend, cultures, whatever the fuck it is.
Change, like...
Yes. Yeah. But you're an artist, so you have the ability to still reflect and respond to culture no matter what it is.
Exactly. But the worst thing you could do is chase trends, which I know we're just not interested in. Like, we just can't do it because it's not fun to us to do. But, like, you see artists, you know, sacrificing a big part of their identity by being like, is this what's cool right now? Then let me latch on to, like, what that is. And that's, like, you might get a short-term spike, but it's, like, once you do that, then your fans are confused and everyone's, like, you know, I don't know what this guy does anymore. He did that, you know, and that's like when you start really struggling, and that's like.
And that being said, like, it's okay to change.
Yeah.
Just like, as long as it's you really changing, and like your art is a reflection of you, not a reflection of like, this is cool and I'm going to change for that reason.
Well, Sick Boy was a little different for you guys.
Totally.
But that was because we were like in a really pissed dark off. Place and pissed off.
Was that because of everything that was happening? Like, what is this song? Everybody Hates Me?
Yeah.
Same thing.
Yeah. That was right on the head with that one, huh?
Yeah. And You Owe Me. Those three songs were like very, like that could have been an EP.
Yeah. Yeah, it could. Yeah. So, I kind of look at it like that too, actually.
If that's what that chapter represented, what does World War Joy represent?
So World War Joy would be like, I guess like our third album. And I feel like Memories and the Collage and Bouquet EPs that came before it that had like the majority of our biggest songs. That was kind of like the beginning of everything. Sick Boy was like, this, like, what did we build? You know, like, what is this? Like, what is this like world that we've kind of creative. Brought ourselves into? Do I like this? And also, who am I, you know, now after all this, you know, like in the beginning, you kind of like chase something and you find something that like is ours. And I think the beginning of that chapter starts with the roses. And then you find your sound, you find like what you want to talk about in songs. And then as soon as like Sick Boy came out, that was the kind of like, okay, here we are. This feels weird. Everything is weird. Everyone is mean. Like what is going on? And like also, like I feel misunderstood, not only in the world, but I don't even know if I fully understand myself. So like, please can everyone chill the fuck out for a second while I like at least figure out my own self-identity. And I feel like World War Joy is a combination of the two, but the mature version, which is we kind of know who we are. We know what we're doing. You know, we're like kind of come out the other side from Sick Boy. And I think we're more in touch with like what we really love. And I don't know. I feel the same way. I'm about to turn 30 and I'm like so f***ing ready to be 30 years old.
Mm-hmm. Why?
Because like, I feel like 30 marks like the time where I'm like officially like a man, where like I'm done listening to like other people's opinions about who I should be or what I should be. I'm like more like resolute in my own moral compass. Like I know like what I think is right, what I think is wrong. And I'm ready to like build and help like other people. I'm like kind of entering like that phase of my life, I feel like, and I feel like this album, the songs are kind of like related to that in some way.
I will help no one, by the way, if you're listening. Do not ask me for anything.
I do agree with that, though. People are scared to get older, but I love getting older. Like, it just, mentally, I just feel like it's so much better.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, as guys, it's a little bit less scary, I guess, in some ways. Like, just the way society has, like, built that. But I totally agree. Like, there's, you know, like, I had fun in my 20s. You know what I mean? I'm still having fun in my 30s. But, like, it doesn't have to be, like, this dark thing, you know, thing where it's like,
time to get old. Serious. Yeah, I don't feel like it's that at all.
Well, no, like, I'll still eat peanut butter and jelly, drink Capri Suns, listen to One Direction, but like, I'm not partying and getting
Let's talk about that.
Yeah. Well, you know, I still live like a young guy, but I'm mentally older. Like, I'm not going to get wasted and be hungover all day and waste my time. Like, there's things to do in life.
Yeah.
I'm totally. On the inside, he's 11 years old.
And isn't it just a cool title, World War Joy? Like,
I love it.
It's just like a cool title. Like, I mean, and so, like, the core of what that represents, like, when the two together, like, it's just.
Yeah, there's nothing joyful about world wars.
Yeah, exactly. But it's kind of like.
But it's summing up this moment in your life
exactly.
So
it's the moment after the storm, after like you've kind of, you know, fought to become who I think I'm supposed to be for the rest of my life, you know? Or at least part one of that. I'm sure when I'm 40, I'll be like, nah. But that's getting older.
Does Sick Boy help you figure out who you are?
For sure.
Like creating that?
I had to put that song out because I was so like angry and like. You know, I don't even know if everyone like understood or even gave a shit where I was like the things I like said on that record, but like I had to say it because like I couldn't give an interview where like someone would tell what I meant or articulate it the way I wanted to, and I had to put it in a song. There was no other way I could like say like this is how I feel right now. This is where all my anxiety sits, and this is why, and this is the way that I've like come up with saying it, and it's in song form. So I had to put that out.
I do have to say, this is the first interview we've done with you guys where you've seemed like happier and more talkative and you're into it.
We ate salads before we got here.
Okay, so maybe that's
a big part of it.
We also have a bad relationship with press, as you guys have probably seen. Like, we've said a lot of stupid but you know our personality is like very self-deprecating and also like, you know, taking the piss a lot of the times. And then like you print a quote that we say.
You have huge dicks.
And you're like, that's crazy. Like that, like that's still being talked about. Like we put that in a bio as a joke.
A
decade ago, and people are still like, So
the second day we met, because every DJ in EDM,
it was the Wikipedia.
Yeah, no, it wasn't even that. It was on our Facebook bio, the Chainsmokers. The second day we ever met and started it, we were like, dude, DJs are so lame. Like their bios are like. Then he like graced the CDJ.
They were born with a CDJ.
Yeah, like, and their leather jackets and long hair. And so we were like, let's just write our bio like a total joke. You know what I mean? And we spent like 30 minutes like crafting this stupid like thing. And we put it up there and that was it. And we never thought about it again. And
like now, literally forgot about it for five years. Yeah. Like, literally forgot it was out there. And now it's just like part of who we are.
Yeah. That and punching each other in the face before shows.
Where did we just say that? Because we were bored in an interview.
Yeah. And Chad Kroger.
When we do like six interviews in a row, by the end, we're just making up like total stories.
And Chad Kroger is our mentor, is a Wikipedia thing though.
Yeah.
That was
someone put that
in
that Wikipedia, which I enjoy.
They're like, so tell us about Chad. We're like,
who?
like your mentor, Chad. We're like, I don't.
They're like, Chad who? They're like, Chad Kroger.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, Nickelback?
You're like,
fucking Wikipedia. God damn it.
So I mean, yeah.
That's a really fucked up prank.
Yeah, but I think what you were saying is like, you know,
my ex-partner did it.
Like the whole like it's fun to hate it. Now that that's like kind of over, like we like kind of take it in stride. Like it doesn't really bother us anymore.
Because those people are still listening to your music. If they're at one of your shows, they're going to Snapchat or put it on their Instagram stories.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, I mean, and I like on stuff too. Everyone does. It's part of culture, like fucking meme culture. Okay.
I
particularly enjoy the meme that any two white guys could say they're the chain smokers. Yeah. That's one of my all time favorites.
Yeah. But you also learn that it's like, yo, this is great. Like we're sitting here talking, you know what I mean? Like obviously you can like do whatever you want at the end of this with it.
Yeah, Zach's just going to totally
But podcasts, you know, like we sat down with Howard Stern for like 2.5 hours once. He's amazing. People were like, that was the greatest interview I've ever heard with him. And, you know, it was just because, like, we got to be ourselves with him, and he's obviously who he is.
That was the greatest interview they heard with us.
Yeah. That was one of the best ones.
Did you make
ever.
It into his book?
It was a very long interview. I think it was the second longest Howard Stern interview.
Yeah.
But see, like,
which we will brag
about. But, like,
about.
But like you do like a Rolling Stones article where they're like sitting down and they're just like, take your words, and then you like come back and they're like, this is the story we made for you. And you're like, this is bull. You hung out with me for like 4 hours, and you know my like whole, you know what I mean?
They take pieces of everything and they puzzle it together.
And I don't blame them, it's their job, you know what I mean? But it's like, why did we do that? What the did we do that for?
Yeah, you know 4 I mean? Hours where you could have been doing something productive.
Exactly.
Instead of being misquoted.
Closer 2 could have been happening.
But we'll never know. Never know what they missed out on.
Artists make songs like, if they have a big song, like would they name it too? Like how they do movies?
Like Trapped in the Confessions Part 2.
True. But is there another one?
Like, is there Part 3?
No, is there like any other Part 2s besides that?
Yeah, for sure.
For big songs.
Yeah.
Like Havana part two.
Yeah. You know? But maybe, I know a lot of people do that like in-house. They don't do it publicly. They're not like...
They just say it to their friends. They're they don't name it the same.
Yeah, now playing Havana Part 2. Havana Continued.
Coming to theaters this summer.
Continued, yeah.
You loved Havana Part 1. You're going to love Havana Part
2. Havana Unana. Yeah. We're giving you ooh more.
Havana Una Mas.
That's it.
Yeah.
There's Confessions Part 2.
Yeah, that's what I say.
Oh, you said that one?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm just looking down a list here.
That's a great one, by the way. Confessions Part 2 is better than Part 1.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
To be honest, I don't even think I really knew there was a Part 1. I assumed that there was a Part 1 because there was a Part 2.
There could not be a Part 1.
There is not.
There is no Part 1.
Oh, really?
Are you sure?
You've been... Oh, God.
Are you sure?
You sound like...
100% a million bucks?
I don't know. He has a trusting energy to him.
He said earlier today that... You know how they say baseball is America's greatest pastime? He said it's not like pastime. He said it's to pass the time is what they mean by that. And he was 100% sure that's what it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because that started around the Depression, right? All those things like movies and baseballs. Because
but he was wrong.
It makes sense. But he now owes us $1 million.
Wait, but it's not right. You're not right. Pass the time. Pastime. No. Oh, I don't like that.
Well, maybe we need to look at the explosion.
Oh, I thought people did it to pass the time.
Well, yeah, well, that's what pastime means. But maybe we should look at the origin of pastime, the phrase. Anyway, this is a meaningless. We're getting way off topic.
Baseball fans, you're like, it's...
the comment section?
Yeah.
By the way, this will be uploaded unedited.
No, don't worry. I know that's why we come here still.
Thank you.
We've learned to say no to some people. And
by the way, that's important, and I think you should do that, because I think at a certain point, you need to control where your words go and who's the vessel for your story, because
absolutely.
That gives merit and value. You know, if it's everywhere and anywhere, then it loses value because...
I mean, that's the biggest struggle for new artists. And luckily now, I feel like there's an outlet for artists, like their Instagram and their Twitter feed and their whatever, TikTok or whatever there is, you know, where they're just like, I don't need anyone else. I can literally connect to everyone I want to directly through here.
Face-to-face.
That's not to say that they shouldn't use it, but like when we started, it was more of like, you need to do these things because that's what everyone does.
Yeah.
And we were like, okay, I don't want to not do them and be like, well, that's why you failed. You know what I mean? And I guess we kind of met in the middle.
Yeah. But I feel like what big, like, you know, like people like fashion magazines, like the Rolling Stones of the world, like the opportunity they have is to like create something, not just like report, you know, like, like do something cool with artists. You know what I mean? And I think they're starting to do that. And that's awesome. Cause like, I hope, you know, people, and people need, like, you know, journalists and criticism and all that stuff, but like, you have an opportunity to do dope shit with people, like,
and really help shape culture,
tell a unique story, you know, like, we get who they are, we can follow them on Instagram, you know, we can read the Wikipedia page if we want to know where they're from. You know?
Vanity Fair does actually a good job of that stuff generally.
Yeah,
Vanity Fair. Totally,
like, even their online stuff, like that Billie Eilish one where they interviewed her like at one stage and then interviewed her like a year or two later.
That
was
fascinating.
And it was so like, cool. This is so cool to see this person like in this year trajectory, all these things change. And she's so charming, obviously. And it's really, you know, like, a sweet, cool video. But yeah, it was just like, great job. You know what I mean? Like, that was a good piece of content. Mm-hmm. Like, it wasn't just like, so tell me, like, why do you call yourself, you know, like, self this? And it's like, she was like telling the story herself, and like it was sweet.
Change the interview game, boys. Yeah. Let's change the press circuit.
We should come in here with interview questions next time for you. And then through these questions, we reveal something about ourselves.
That's beautiful. Wow. We got to brainstorm here.
Is that the Socratic method? I think it is.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
I like that though.
Yeah.
Because I usually do learn. I mean, even when I talk to somebody, I always learn about myself at the same time. Mm-hmm. You said something about drops. I just wanted to go back to it. Creating songs without a drop, the first time you do that, nervous, right?
Yeah. Well, that was a big thing with Sick Boy too, is like, I was so tired of making drops. Like, every song needed to have a musical break, and I was like, I want this to like bang, but I don't want it to like have like this big like climax, you know, that's like what we've done before.
Mm-hmm. But even in the records that don't have a drop, is there still a drop there in a sense?
No. I mean, the last time we put out Do You Mean It has no drop at all. Like, I can't even think what I would even call it to be a drop. But Who Do You Love does.
Who Do You Love
and Call You Mine does.
Mm-hmm. Kill You Softly?
Kills You Slowly doesn't.
Kill You Slowly, I'm sorry. Kills You Slowly. Yeah, no, not at all. Yeah. It's a beautiful record.
Yeah, so we try to do a little bit of both now. Like, if it needs one, it was. We have a really cool record coming out that has like one drop at the end of the song. And so that's a really cool format.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't want to say the name of it, but.
Is this album mostly you guys or a lot of collaborations?
It's 50-50, right?
Yeah, I probably will end up being a little bit more us.
Okay.
But right now it's pretty down the middle, I think. Yeah. But you know, it's like
the next song is a collaboration.
Was Kill You Slowly always intended for just you?
Yeah.
It's your story?
Yeah. No, that one.
Got it.
Yeah. That was an outside song. We loved it though.
So relatable.
Yeah.
But we dress up and play pretend. Then we act like we're good again.
Yeah.
I Do Things I Can't Defend. Max wrote that. He was on that. Max.
No,
Schneider?
Actually it sounds kind of like one of his songs.
So that's why he gets credit.
Down low.
Yeah.
And he was a really nice guy about it, too.
Yeah, he was really cool.
Yeah. Good karma for him in the music songwriter world.
Yeah.
Because someone was like, yeah, this kind of sounds like it. And it was like, one of the things where you're like, look, he's a homie. Let's just hit him. And
he was cool.
Deal with this, like, the proper way versus, like, the crazy way, you know, like, the way where you get sued down the road or something. And nobody wants press like that.
No. Yeah. That's called.
And it's always, it's never, like, on purpose, too. You're just like, we just made the song, and you're like, I f-ing love it. And then someone's like, hey, did you guys thought about this? And you're like, but he was really cool about it.
Karma, kindness, and collaboration.
Yeah, chain smokers.
The four C's.
Karma.
Karma with the C though.
Yeah. Okay.
Figure it out. Just work on it.
Sounds like
We gotta go. Alex and Drew, the chain smokers. Please call you mine, featuring Beauty Rice. Thanks for hanging.
This podcast is part of the Zach Sang Show Podcast Network.